I waited a moment before asking her, "So, are you ready to tell me about Schiller?" She started to touch her head, but then pulled her hand away, letting it drop. "Stupid, huh?" I shook my head. "I've seen worse. I didn't know who or what he was." She sighed. "We got close, and I confided in him about a period in my life when I'd made some mistakes, drugs and other stuff, and he made it clear that if I didn't do as he asked, he'd take the info to the State Athletic Association and get me canned. He finally got around to wanting access to Jaya, thinking I'd go along, and when I didn't..." She gestured to the hospital surroundings and then slumped back against her pillow. "You can't use that magic badge and get me out of here, can you?"
"Nope."
She looked toward the bear as he stood at the window with his back to us. "I've been fighting to get these girls into the state tournament for 7 years.
"Well, you did it.
And now I can't coach them there."
"No, you can't.
Isn't there anybody to take your place? An assistant coach or something?"
"No, I mean, there are hangers-on that'll come in now that the team has made it to the tournament. All the wrong kind of people. The girls won't respond to that, and they'll just fold."
She glanced at Henry. "They're a very close-knit group, distrustful of outsiders, which works to their advantage in competition with other teams, I suppose, but doesn't open them up to the idea of a new leader."
"What about Jaya?"
She stared at the sheets covering her legs.
"What about her?"
"Come on."
"They don't want her, Sheriff."
The bear spoke to the plate glass, his voice ricocheting back at us.
"The Navajo are a much stronger team. They may not want her, but they need her.
They'd rather lose without her than lose with her."
He turned. "They do not have to lose at all."
"They don't have a coach." He turned and approached the bed on the other side.
"What about the man before you?"
"You're kidding, right?"
"I am serious."
"No offense, Mr. Standing Bear, but those girls are scared to death of you." He smiled his paper-cut smile.
"I'm not talking about me."
She slowly turned to look at me. I cleared my throat. "Not my idea." She turned her head back to the bear. "Does he know anything at all about basketball?"
"Not particularly, but I can assist him."
And he took a chair from beside the wall, pulled it out to the other side of the bed, and sat, taking a few seconds to compose himself.
"These girls need a chance, and this is the only thing I can come up with, so unless you have another idea..."
She smiled, but then stopped, suddenly placing her face into her hands. I leaned forward.
"Are you all right?"
She nodded briefly and then slumped back on her pillow.
"Do you have anyone else?"
He waited, but she didn't respond.
"I think they will accept him, and at least that gives you breathing room until they release you."
She reached over and pulled a thick binder from the nightstand, dropping it into her lap. "They have 3 games in the next 3 nights, and that's if they win every one of them." He placed a hand on her hand, very different from the one he'd placed on mine.
"Is that not what we are hoping for?"
After a few seconds, she lowered her hand onto the playbook and stared at him.
"You're crazy." "Yes."
She handed me the vinyl binder.
"You're crazy, too." "Boy, howdy."
I sounded more certain of it than the Cheyenne Nation. I just want to be clear that this is a bad idea. It was only about a mile to the south side of Billings, but it might as well have been another planet. While I drove, Henry ignored me and chatted with Gordo on his cell phone, nodding and grunting a lot, but basically conveying nothing to me.
"Uh-huh."
Waiting for a train on 27th Street, I carried on the monologue with myself. Call my daughter and ask her about my abilities with teenage girls. He nodded into the phone.
"Uh-huh."
There were numerous times when Katie threatened to run away from home. And as a matter of fact, she did run away, to your place one time.
"Uh-huh."
"Have you ever thought that maybe what those girls need is a little scaring?"
"Uh-huh."
"This isn't funny."
"Uh-huh."
I watched the car speed by, wishing I was on one.
"I mean it."
"What?" When I turned,
He'd hung up the phone and slipped it into the inside pocket of his leather jacket. "So are we going to give Lane back his shotgun?" The bear peered through the fogged windshield and then reached over and flipped on the defroster. "If Gordo Hansen and the Rosebud County Sheriff wish it to be so, but I doubt it." The last of the trains pulled out, throttled up, and headed south. "Did you hear anything I said?" "You have serious misgivings about your prospects as a high school basketball coach." He shrugged. "Gordo says it was indeed the same Ithaca shotgun, but because the only fingerprints on the weapon are mine, I have been moved up to suspect number one."
"You're kidding."
"I am. But you are obviously not in a joking mood." I turned the corner and we drifted into a rundown neighborhood. "No, I'm not. DCI and the FBI are on scene, but they haven't discovered anything out of the ordinary other than the somewhat extraordinary existence Louis Howard appeared to be living. They are also glad we are attending to Lane and may approach this as an official visit." I pulled in and parked across from the tiny house. "Not our jurisdiction. According to the agent in charge and Gordo, we may proceed as if it were." Dog whined, but I shook my head. "I'm not letting you out in this neighborhood. You're likely to catch something." I waited for Henry, and we started across the pavement, the ground fog making it feel like we were in a film noir.